Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, listeners. This episode of the Battlestar Galactic cast may feature spoilers for events that come later on in the series. So be warned.
Be warned.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat. This is an official colonial government broadcast.
Hello and welcome to the Battlestar Galactic cast brought to you by Sci-Fi Wire. My name is Mark Bernardin.
And I'm Tricia Helfer.
Hey, Tricia, how are you?
I'm the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man right now. I got stung by wasps and one on the head, and it has just enveloped my entire face. So,
I mean, the preamble that you gave before you came on, you're like, listen, I'm going to turn my camera on, but you need to be warned. There are just pustules and bumps and swollen marks like boulders. Like, it is as if you had been dragged behind a car is how you made it out. And then you were like, okay, look at it. And it's just, oh, hey, Tricia, how are you?
Well, kind of the first thing I heard this morning when I woke up was a friend telling me, you look like Linda Blair from The Exorcist.
Oh, so like young and attractive then.
No.
She was up.
I've never seen The Exorcist, and then he pulled up the photo. He goes, "You just need a few cuts." So, yeah.
The most thing is,
it just feels, you know, when you're swollen, and you feel like you smile, or you're in your vision, you can see the edges of your nose that are so swollen. You actually see your skin as you're looking out.
Oh damn! I have never felt that way, but
I just feel puffy, but I'll survive.
All right. All right. Cut me, because, Mickey. I can go back in.
And thank God this is only audio.
Yes.
But we have a special guest today.
So
do you want to do the previously on and then get to our very, very, very special guest?
Yes, we're going to talk about The Hub today, which was written by Jane Espenson, the great and powerful, wonderful Jane Espenson.
And directed by Paul Edwards.
Paul Edwards. Has he done, do you recall him doing Battlestar before now?
No.
So First-timer. First-timer club.
Which for the fourth season was very rare for Battlestar.
Indeed. But it is with this episode, we will welcome aboard a guest that we've wanted to have for a long time. And I'm so glad that it finally managed to come together. The spheres of the universe all synced and swirled and fell into place.
And I can hear a collective, when you say her name, all the Galacticast fans, I can hear a collective, ah!
Yes.
So I just joined in with them.
Hey, Grace.
Hi, guys. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to make noise or not. And then watching what you do, it's like, wow, these are the pros. This is how you do it. So all the podcasts from now on will be exactly like you guys.
Yeah, no, we are absolutely the Cadillac of podcasts.
That's what I have to apologize. It's a
1973 Cadillac, and it's been out in the sun for a bit, but it's still
a little bit of rust damage.
But classic beauty.
There's bees living under the hood, but
remind me.
And murder hornets.
I'm gonna find a way all episode to remind you about the bees. Tricia, about the hornets.
I'm thrilled to be here, guys. And I got to be honest, I have not watched, I don't think I've watched an episode of Battlestar since maybe 2010. Was that when we finished? 2008, maybe? 8 or 9.
Wow.
No.
Wow. Hey, do you want to do a podcast when we're done?
What is that?
You'll do another rewatch of Battlestar with a different Cylon.
I know. That was the rationale for starting with you. She was like, I haven't seen an episode since we filmed it, and I didn't even see them all then. I was thinking about a rewatch. That's a podcast, young lady.
I love it. Yeah, except I don't have the patience to wait like once a week to watch. I even back then I would wait until we had at least 4 episodes. so I could watch it. It was just too painful just to watch one or two.
Well, this one, you introduce a new character. But before we get to that, let's do a little previously on Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica.
I told you I was going to be a little loopy.
Oh man, are you drinking? Is this an alcohol aid or
no? I just got home from emergency, and they injected me with a big dose of steroids, so I might be a little. She goes, this might make you like race a little bit. So,
outstanding.
Yeah, but sine qua non was last week, and we had the guest appearance of Mr. Mark Sheppard.
Indeed.
And which was sort of like a, how do we get Mark Sheppard back in, right? Because it was sort of a separate from just sort of a little side story.
Yeah, very much felt like, hey, that's a dude who's got a mortgage payment. Maybe we can put him back on the show to let him pay some bills. Why? Just because.
And we find out that Lance was actually long dead.
Indeed, his poor cat. We spent lots of time talking about his poor dead cat.
And he ends up with the hero Jake. But there was other more important things that happened as well.
Are you sure, though?
We have a new president, basically. Zarek was ousted.
Indeed. Leodam is the president of the colonies. Caprica 6 is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie is dead.
Caprica 6 is pregnant? I've forgotten about this.
Yes.
And does he find out last
time? Ty is the father. Really? Yeah.
Yes, he does. Ty's the father, and the president gets
so confusing.
Yeah, a lot happens.
Yes. Athena's in the brig, but she gets Hera back. And we end with Adama all by himself in a raptor, waiting, hopefully, for Roslyn and the rebel base ship to jump back in and return.
After she's been kidnapped.
Yes. I think that's the table being set.
And we pick up, this was 2 days ago.
Yes.
So Adama's been out in space for 2 days. And Grace, so to jog your memory, Athena's in prison because you shot Natalie, the six that was trying to broker peace with the Cylon or with the humans. And when I bend down to pick up Hera, you shoot me for no reason.
Oh my God. You could say anything at this point and I could go, okay. almost anything. I know that, I know the sixes and the eights in general and Deanna. I know the main characters.
Yes.
This is going to be really embarrassing. Let's go for it.
Well, we just pressed play on the episode, but before we go too deep into what happens, let's kind of go back to the beginning. Let's talk about, how your entree to Battlestar. Like, what do you remember about the casting process? How it came to you?
Oh my goodness. This feels like a convention. This is awesome. Just going right back to the beginning. I remember when I first went in, it was because the show was being cast probably mostly in the States and then being shot in Vancouver. It's like because of union things, they have to hire a certain amount of people. So I went initially for Dwala, who was played by Candace McClure. And then they'd asked me to come back for Starbuck. And I got really weird about it. And then my acting teacher was like, what are you doing? And I was like, what do you mean? And I was trying to do the audition. She's like, are you being like this because it's a lead? I'm like probably like flinching and doing like weird things on the side. And meanwhile, I'm like, I don't know. And I didn't realize like how much of a mental jump that was for me. And thank goodness for a million reasons I didn't get Starbuck. But when we were, when I went in, after the initial, I had to go to LA, and Katie, I, and another girl were the first three girls there. And we looked so different. And we thought that we were going for different characters. And then we found out it was the same. Kind of didn't really even know what to make of it. Cause it's like, because it was such a, like, it was, it's like a wild card thing. Like everyone was, we didn't know, it wasn't this one type that they had wanted. But they were doing, they were casting for Apollo and Starbuck at the same time. And so there was all these different formations and stuff. And at the very end, when they were kind of letting most people go, it was like very, like, I guess I don't watch these shows, but I think it's like kind of like Bachelor or one of those shows where they let everybody know. And you're all there, and it's like you have to, and then if you didn't get it, then you have to take the elevator down. Like, in front of everybody. And we were all standing in front of the elevator. It was like really strange. Like, I don't know, how could it be any more uncomfortable? But yeah. And then, you know, ultimately I left and it was down to, it was, Jamie Bamber, me and Katie. And there was another guy, I believe. And then later on, I got a phone call that I had, gotten Boomer, and I had not paid attention to her at all. So I had no idea. I didn't really focus on her. I had no idea she was a Cylon. I thought Ron Moore had changed it later on. And I, of course, I thought that he made a big mistake by giving me more than one character on the show, because I could barely handle one. I'm like, oh no, he rolled the dice and he screwed up by picking me to be more than one person. But yeah, so I remember us, Katie and I, both being there and her just having a very chill energy. And it wasn't like guards were up. And I think she'd gone in like 6 times already in LA, but that was my second one for Starbuck.
I think it's funny because we always talk about Trisha having to play multiple versions of Six, but I think, you know, at least from a viewer's perspective, Boomer's the one that we see more versions of than one, you know, like in the miniseries, it's, she's on the surface with Hilo and she's lying about that. And oh, and she's on, like, how was it getting into it? How was it first wrapping your head around having to play these two distinct characters that had so much in common, that were so similar?
I think because, well, the thing is, for me, it was pretty easy in the beginning because the way I had simplified it was that I knew that Athena had to be a copy. Before her name was Athena, she had to be a copy of Boomer. So, and the difference also was that it was always with Tomo Pennicott, who played Hilo. It was always kind of on the planet. So we were usually in the woods versus like on a soundstage on Galactica. And so I didn't realize how the difference in geography had really made it, made a clear distinction for me. And I didn't have to kind of, I didn't have to start separating them quite yet. And because her whole modus operandi was to trick Hilo and then get pregnant, it was a lot easier and I didn't realize that what I was doing. And then once she came back onto the base ship, it got extremely confusing. And not just for me, because we'd have to stop in rehearsal and be like, I think it was James that said, wait, have we met? You know, because I was like, because I'm playing both. So I forgot I had to think specifically, does she know who Baltar is? And I think at that moment she didn't. So it does change. It's a subtle things. That change. And I think, Trisha, didn't you do more versions than me?
I think overall throughout the series, yeah, more that we know of. But I think, I mean, we definitely see you first with multiples, I think. Even multiples like CGI multiples, right? Right. But I didn't play my second character really until Gina. No, I played Shelley Godfrey, never mind, in the first. But yeah, I think I added it up and I had like 9 different ones or something like that of like that you knew that had a storyline, not just, you know, but Athena. When I think of it, I think of Athena and Sharon as like the two main ones that you had.
For me, I think of Athena and Boomer and the rest of the eights are just kind of like. Cookie cutter. And then once I started making too many, because I had this one episode where I had to align with Deanna and it didn't make sense. And so the only way I could make sense of it is I had decided that that version had downloaded more of maybe Boomer's thoughts and that's why it made sense. And then when I watched it, it was just confusing actually. So I realized like you can't get too complex and too nitty gritty and like you can make nuances between the two characters. But I think, like I said, once they got together, it did get a lot more confusing. We did have to start being really, really careful. But I think for me, my most stressful episode was so much smaller than when James Callis had to do it, when you had to play both of the characters at the same time. And with mine, we got to do some camera magic because it was like over the shot. So I got to keep doing it with another actor who just played off the other lines. And then whereas James had to do it all like sitting next to each other. So it was the same screen. And I always remember, I marveled like watching him. I was like, he's doing what I thought I had to do. We loved that scene. So good. Did you guys just play it recently?
Yeah. It was a few episodes ago, right? I can't remember which one it is.
Yeah, but fourth season for sure.
Wasn't it with Mark Shepard, actually? Wasn't he opposite? It was like in the cafeteria or something. He was sitting at a table.
No, it's opposite Tori. It's opposite Reka.
Hmm.
Oh, right. Yeah. But I remember talking. He was brilliant in that scene.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when you have the two together, that's where you really want to highlight and be able to play off each other and have the contrast and the difference in body language and whether it be tone or tempo with your speaking. Can't remember exactly what I did, but I do remember what Michael Reimer had told me when I was playing, I think, Boomer. I think the first one or whichever one I was doing, I remember he came over and he just said, "Why are you being such a bitch?" And I was very surprised. I didn't know what to make of it. And I think he was just saying, like, don't do that. Just do it like normal. And I think at the time it seemed, oh my gosh, I look like such a baby. So what the heck?
Well, talking about new characters, this is a new character in this episode that.
Yeah. Like when I had been writing my notes, I kept referring to her as fake Athena.
Because what she does is I don't know if it's here or if it's later in the episode, but she has downloaded on purpose Sharon's memories. So she she confronts Hilo with it because she says something that he doesn't think she should know or whatever. That was private between him and Athena. And
well, she rubs on his neck. She gets all like crazy wifey immediately.
Right here.
Like, yeah.
And he's like, Sharon learned how to do that or whatever. And she's like, yeah, I downloaded her memories because I was, interested. And you're just like going, what a violation of downloading somebody's memories of your private moments with your husband and your like.
And also life just happens. Like, I mean, this is like in a sci-fi show and already it feels uncomfortable. You know, it's interesting how many themes that we're touching on that we can talk about and.
Yeah, it's because it's about intimacy. Like, I think a lot of this episode is about intimacy. Like, we, one of the storylines is Rosalind kind of between every jump of the base ship, she's having these visions of herself on Galactica that's empty and Elosha is there. And as the story kind of progresses, it starts talking about how she doesn't love anybody on that ship. She hasn't allowed herself to love anybody on that ship. And, people are standing over her when she's getting her treatments and like, do those people love you? Do those people share your actual, inner thoughts or feelings? And the story is being told that like, not at all. You know, she is still the leader. She is still separate from everybody else. And just this beat of I downloaded Athena's memories because I got curious about Athena and Hera and you. And it's also this intimacy that's not earned in a way. And Hilo is kind of bristling against it, which is like, I mean, you look like my wife and you smell like my wife. You touch my neck like my wife, but you're not my wife. And what are the things that actually differentiate you from her are this big.
Wow. We get super deep with that about being and memories. Because then on a flip side, I remember hearing about someone having amnesia from an accident. And their tastes changed, what they liked, what they wanted to do. Maybe how they even talked. And then you're like on the other end, you're like, who is a person? Are you the memories? And is that them? Or is it the body because that was the original person? I don't know.
Yeah. Are we a collection of our memories or our impulses or our DNA or whatever? Like what makes a person a person? And this whole fourth season is about sort of making Cylons people in it that they had always been and they always believed that they were. But by taking away the resurrection hub, you're adding that last element, which is this needs to be all you are. Your life needs to be finite. And without that finite life, then life doesn't actually have its meaning. And I think that it's a show that has always been dealing with 1,000 different things at once. And watching them all kind of coalesce by the time you get to the ending and these ideas of identity and intimacy and legacy and purpose and destiny all kind of landing. And I told this to her. We talked to Ron about it. I'm like, man, I hate this show because it makes it hard to do other shows. You're like, well, yeah, no, they did that really well. I guess we're not going to do that then. Son of a bitch.
What aren't they doing? Are we allowed to talk about the new? I mean, wait, I don't know anything about it except maybe writing it. Is it, or did we just, you don't know. No, not allowed to talk. I can't tell what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk. I don't know what's happening. Although, you know, and I think we talked, didn't we talk about it, Trisha? The fact that at one point, they asked me to pitch on it. They're like, hey, do you want to pitch on the new Battlestar? And I was like, guys, you don't know how weird this is.
Now you know what it feels like to play me in a different, but you're doing it now.
Like, do you want to come up with a take for a new Battlestar? And I literally had to ask Ron for his blessing. I was like, man, I don't even want to think about it unless you tell me it's okay. And he said, hey, no, my version is a remake of somebody else's thing. All I would ask is that I don't want to see Roslyn. I don't want to see, you know, use any character that was in the original show.
You can, like,
because that's what I
told. Yes or no?
He's like, you can. Oh. Like, if you want an Adama, if you want a Boomer, if you want, you know, Apollo or Starbuck, fine. But Chief Tyrell is mine. Ty is mine. Roslyn is mine. Like, these are my characters that I would prefer nobody else touch.
Because they're not from the original? Is that what?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. It's like any characters that had been in the original 70s show that I refashioned, go for it. But my characters are my characters. It's like, all right.
So I have a shot.
You have a shot. I bet dollars to donuts it will be a Boomer.
But then number 6 he created, right?
He did.
Yeah. The humanoid Cylons would be, you wouldn't be a Cylon anymore if you were Boomer.
Boring. Why would I want to read it? Don't do it, Mark. Don't do it. Come on. Yeah. Just throw it away. I'm kidding.
I know. And honestly, like, I kept on saying nothing good can come of this.
How could you? Like, I mean, it's what a challenge. And then, you know, when they, like, let's say they, I'm not saying to top, but like, let's say they are able to meet or, you know, whatever. When that happens, you're like, wow, like there still is room. You know, I'm not saying for this show, but kind of other things where you're like, why would you remake that when it's already been remade so many times? Like, hasn't it been done? And then they go further and you're like, well, okay. You know, it's like, and there goes like, that's like, it just speaks for creativity and innovation and like different points of view. And it's
when I first heard it, it felt kind of odd because our Battlestar is still so much in the
ether. Like,
ether, exactly, that it felt too soon, but it is, you know, 15 years ago now or whatever, and we weren't widely accepted to begin with, so who are we to go, they can't do another one.
I'm going to go to Comic-Con and do a throwback.
Yeah. That would be the greatest. The entire original cast is like, boo, this is garbage.
Of course we should do a podcast where it's like we all get dressed up as if we're like, you know, we're all senior citizens and we're watching it and we're throwing popcorn at the screen.
You missed the point.
Yes, I like this. We're back to after commercial. We're back to because we're watching on sci-fi.com. Mm-hmm. And you give a really impassioned speech here about, because trust it, we have to go in. The only way to get in to attack the hub, because they would pick up the, you know, the Galactica's Viper's signatures or whatever, is the Cylon pilots have to tow them in and then release the cables and then the Vipers can pick up. So it's taking trust. So here we're talking about trust and nobody's trusting everybody, but you, this, whichever eight you are here in this episode, I don't know the name, gives
fake Athena.
Fake Athena. Perfect. Fake Athena gives a very impassioned speech about, you know.
I love this subtitle.
I wrote it down somewhere, but I can't see it.
I didn't realize it was going to be muted, so these subtitles are very helpful. I actually remember the scene doing it because, I mean, I had so much fear around, I guess, like, related to acting. And when I would see, like, Gaius Baltar's dialogue, which was like a page long of monologue, a part of me, I was just incredibly relieved that I'd never had to do that. And because of you know, past whatever life experiences, I think I realize, I will admit that up till this point, I think I was really only comfortable with 3 lines in a row. Like, that probably sounds really bad, but I will just say that because I've had to do more since, and I think I survived. But I remember here, there was more that I had to do, and there was, I don't know, I don't want to reveal other things about other people's performances who are part of the scene, but I noticed that I must have pushed through something to be able to deliver whatever speech it was. If I go back to actually listen to it, I'll be like, oh, it was only 4 lines. Wasn't that much?
No, it's pretty meaty. It's pretty meaty. We'll drop it in so that everybody can listen on the podcast.
And you do mention that, I think you mentioned in it that, you know, this when we blow this hub, these Cylon pilots are just as mortal as you human ones are, you know? Mm. So
yeah, it's a really good, it's a particular class of speech, which I think, you know, it's basically like the Henry VIII, the Saint, like Swithin's Day speech or whatever, like, you know, whoever fights with me on this day is my band. We band of brothers. For whoever, you know, is with me on this day shall be my brother. It's the, like, St. Crispin's Day. Like, we're about to do a giant, awful, incredible thing. And let me, like, exhort the troops to battle. And, like, it's a pretty badass one as far as those go.
Man, that sounds impressive.
And then we go into a scene with, I love this scene with Mary and James, too, basically fighting with the hybrid. Like, give me the information. No, give me the information. And they're yelling at her, and they're talking about the opera, the hybrid's gibberish about the opera house, and...
Well, it's like two parents fighting over the attention of a kid, you know, and one of them is like, okay, hybrid, here's what I need you to do. And the other one is like, just yell at her. She'll do what you tell her to do if you just yell. and Baltar's like, I don't understand how Baltar's look changed. Like, he went from like weird hippie Jesus now to like kind of pseudo Errol Flynn. Like, he's got the weird little mustache and goatee thing and the little hair that's kind of jaunty and like, what? Who styled you in the middle of a giant, like, battle sequence? Who said, you know what, man, you need, like, your action figure look now? Is like, Baystar casual?
Maybe it's the one that he had been held on, you know, months earlier, and he had a stash of clothes.
Yeah, like, oh, here's my little white droopy gear, and... my little coat and I got it. I feel nice. I feel at home.
And I would love those little things that we would have, because stuff that you take for granted, especially in the beginning, we'd just about to be doing a scene and then we would stop. And then everyone would question, would we have this on Battlestar? And I remember I think someone's like, oh, can I get a pad and a pen? And then we were blocking and then we stopped. And then I forget who it was, looked at the pen. Do we have pens? And it was just silent for a while. All right, better make a call or something like that. And we would have this kind of a lot. And like, I think a lot of the times I remember the fruit that we would have would be maybe like dragon fruit or rambutan or, you know, some kind of hairy, strange, like different fruit, like at least strange for us, you know, like in North America. And then at the end, and when I think we're on the Silent Day ship, and there was a tray of, I think, apples and grapes. It looked so weird. I was like, what is this doing on our show? And it looked suddenly so foreign and so, not pedestrian, but kind of like, this is so normal. Like, are we allowed to have this? And it was like very much by choice. Am I allowed to go jumping all over episodes? I don't know.
This is exactly what it should be. do you remember when you got the word that this was going to be the last season?
Oh my gosh. I'm so sad that I've lost so many memories. I think my previous job, I just had so much dialogue to process and I wasn't sleeping enough that I think my brain just said, well, if you want to do this, we just got to start getting rid of this stuff. Sadly, it sucks. It really, really, really sucks. But what I remember about that time is that what I remember, there's a back and forth, and what they ultimately said is when they came back, we got the pickup, but we only got one season guaranteed. And then so Ron said, okay, then I'm going to end it this season. Because if they'd given us two, I think you would have written it over two, which would have been so interesting to see what would have happened. I mean, everything's kind of seems like perfection how it ended, but he did say that, and he didn't want the possibility that we would not get the ending, like a proper ending.
Yeah, he definitely didn't want it to, the end to be pulled from him.
Yeah.
So, and he had said at the beginning that he always saw it as a 5-year run, which it essentially was 4 seasons, but technically 5. It was just air dates that made it 4, you know, or 2.0 and 2.5, 4.0 and 4.5.
Yeah. And also the other thing about the other ending that we almost had because of the writer's strike. Always remember.
Yeah, which is coming up next episode or two, Revelations or the
one. Yeah, and I remember that was pretty significant because it really seemed like that could be the end, the way that it wasn't just like a standalone episode about like Ellen, and it was like, oh, this really could be the end of the series.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, we've mentioned that before a few times. And I think it was Tomo that reminded me. I didn't remember. Was it Tomo or was it Truco? Anyway, in that episode when we're filming it and we don't even know if we're coming back or not, and Michael Reimer just started giving the camera to different cast members to run the camera and then tape shit. Just here, you guys go off with the camera and do something over there. You guys go off with that camera and do something over there.
Like pair up and then, you know, figure out what you're going to do and shoot some vignettes. And I remember being so extraordinarily present. And I know I said this at conventions, but like I was with Candace McClure, and she, you know, there's no dialogue. We didn't write any dialogue, but I didn't go to film school, but selected, I guess, the shot or the frame. And, you know, obviously like the real pros are doing it. They're setting up the frame. They already know how to do everything. So you're kind of like, basically make sure she's in the shot by the water, you know, and they're like, yes, little girl, thank you. We'll take over from here. And I remember being so present. And that was the first time that I thought, should I like be interested in directing? Because it seems like I'm more interested in directing than acting.
Did you ever indulge that? Have you indulged it? Have you gone down?
No, I haven't. I think I'm like that kind of chicken actor that's like, well, I know I can do this, and I do. You know, it's like the, you know, kind of like the fear of failure thing. It's like, oh, if I do that and I fall on my face, but it's sort of like, but I kind of want to, you know. And I love that people, when they risk. I know there's usually so much chatter, but like, oh, they did that and, you know, they should go back to their day job, or like, oh, they're flop. And there's just like so much, I guess, criticism, and people are so ready to judge versus like, dude, someone pushed against their fears and went for something. And so I feel like I would do it on a much smaller scale and make it really quiet because I just want to do it. But no,
yeah, I remember seeing an interview with Harrison Ford. I want to say it was like the Letterman show or whatever. And he, at the point, like now he's 76. He must have been like 70 years old. And I was like, and Dave asked him, so you took up flying at this age? Like, why? And Harrison said, because it's been a long time since I learned how to do a thing. And I just wanted to learn how to do something. And I always found that kind of admirable, which is the like, yeah, I know how to do my job. Like, I know how to do this stuff. I needed to learn something. I needed to exercise that part of my brain that is taking in new information and processing it and putting it to good use. Wow. And I was like, yeah. Like, I don't buy you getting an earring at 80 years old. That seems ridiculous. But learning how to fly, learning how to do something? Yeah, all right.
Not pottery. That's cool. Not making sushi. Go for it.
Yeah. So, yes, you should do that. I wholeheartedly recommend that you do a thing that you don't already know how to do and give yourself the latitude to fail at it for a while. Because in the grand history of every idea that worked, there was a long line in which it didn't.
Yeah. And it's humbling. One day I will do it.
Good. Excellent. And then we'll do a podcast. So yes, on our program that we're allegedly talking about, the military action that had been planned, the super risky, you know, let's tow a bunch of Vipers in to blow up the resurrection hub, seems to be working. And meanwhile, I didn't understand this, Tricia. Maybe you can illuminate me. why is Baltar talking to the Centurion and trying to like sow insurrection for what seems to be no good reason?
No good reason. I don't know. I mean, I didn't make that many notes about it. And I feel like, I mean, Baltar has a curiosity, right? As a scientist, you're going to have a curiosity about you. And I just wrote Baltar talking to the Centurion. Well, no shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
It's Baltar's like still talking to the Centurion.
It's like he's just poking the hornet's nest.
Yeah, and I think he's curious about what the level of
that.
Oh, and it went right over my head. But a bump. God damn it. Yes. I think he's like you can see there's the subtle movements of the Centurion when what Baltar's saying lands and talking about, God and some of the other stuff he says and obviously that when the Vipers are launched. And I think it's, to me, I just kind of read it as curiosity and trying to figure out how much this machine can feel and think and do. Because up until that point, they were just the mechanical robots, really. But ever since they've had their hypo whatever taken out, mm-hmm. so they have some gift of reason. I think he's just curious. I mean, that was my take on it. I could be completely wrong. But that was my take on it.
No, I just wrote, leave it alone, Gaius, in my notes. Just stop. Just you. It's not going to help.
You can never make a scientist stop being curious.
Yeah. Just like, nobody likes you, dude. Stop doing this.
Then you love to hate him. And then you love to yell at the screen. Love to hate him. And he's so great at it. And then he's charming. And there's so many crazy visual effects here. Do you remember in the very beginning we had zero sound in space?
Yeah.
Just the Tycho drums. And then we started, because Ron said he wouldn't. I don't know at what point he's changed his mind or network made him or whatever. But then now apparently there is actually sound in space. I mean, not now. Now we realize in current day, that there are like clicks and whatevers and, stuff that I guess, I don't know if it's like star systems are making. I definitely don't understand it. But
Like the radio transmissions from distant quasars and whatever that you can kind of pick up on that stuff.
Yeah, it's like
Gary Hudson killing it.
What? Who is?
No, Gary Hudson, the special effects dude. Gary. Like all that is so gorgeous. Like it is better than most things you get on TV today. And I think it's because the design of it is so strong. Like it'll take us forever to render this, but when we do, it's gonna look beautiful.
Yeah, it really does look beautiful. Like when you got a glimpse inside, and I forgot that. Because I believe I've only watched everything once. And I vowed back then I would watch it again, and I don't know why I haven't. It's like so silly. Like even right now, like with all social isolation, it's like I think most people are kind of, finished their DVR or, joke was like I finished Netflix.
I got to the end. I didn't know there was an end.
I haven't got to one single thing. I was like, isn't that weird? Like lame. That's yes, judge me. Super lame. I understand that.
Well, what have you been doing?
Oh, yes, I did some cooking. Like I think I made bread, brioche, like a challah bread. Did some kind of arts and crafts things. I did like the most inane thing I think I did was picking. I basically tried to clean my couch. And then I ended up staining it with a stain remover. So I was just going to order a new cover because it looked really bad. It was now orangey. And I was like, oh, this is horrible. And then I found out it cost so much. It would take like 4 months to get it sent in. And I was like, oh, this is too bad. And so then I tried different things. And then what I ended up doing was shaving it. But I tried different things like, like a pill eater that you have for sweaters. Mm-hmm. I tried that. Then I tried like a regular razor, then a straight razor. What I didn't realize I was doing, I was shaving the bed of it, but making the fibers longer and longer. So then I had like a weird grassy orange portion. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. Anyway, ultimately what I figured I had to do was I couldn't get rid of it unless I picked it all off with fine point tweezers. Like this is how I wasted a few hours.
Wow. Listen, nothing is wasted. I think we like to beat ourselves up over how we are using our time, during the end of the world. And, You do whatever makes you happy. However you find purpose is as
legit. Oh my God, it's less else. Orange. I can handle it now. It looks less grassy.
I missed part He's of that because really I had to go break up a cat fight. And I had to take my headphones off so I didn't bring
yeah, the Grace bared your soul and you had to go break up a cat fight.
Yeah.
What else is new?
But then I came back to this scene I love with Baltar because it's almost like he's morphing up. He's with the jumping away, you know, and the centurion and him got kind of almost blown up. His wound is opening back up. Yeah, and so
he's
Rosalind
starting to bleed out.
Stabs him with the morphine. And it's almost like, I mean, he's laying out everything to Rosalind, but it feels to me like he wants to get it off his chest.
Yeah, like this is his confessional, right? Like this is his, and it's so beautiful because his confessional is giving Rosalind, is giving Laura everything she's ever wanted from him, which is basically him admitting that he's had this massive guilt that had just been hanging over him, you know, ever since the beginning of the sort of colonial exodus. And it's the thing that she'd been trying to get from him that she'd never been able to get. And she asks him, what's the guilt about? And he says, I gave the access codes to the Cylons. They wiped out most of humanity. And it's like this moment of you know, be careful what you wish for. And you can see it land on her. And then you can see him explaining what it means to him to have been able to reckon with that. And what he's found in this the Cylon God and the One God. And it's like, you know, God doesn't make, let me see, hold on a second. I got it here.
You got it written
down. I blamed myself, but God made the man that made that choice. And God made us all perfect. And so how can it be anything but the will of God that I did what I did?
And he talks about how, like, the floods, a flood is a force of nature, but it ends up rejuvenating. It ends up causing all this destruction and everything, but it ends up ultimately, doesn't wipe everybody out, rejuvenating. And so he's told her what she wants to hear, but then he's also flavored it with something that she's going to have to grapple with, right? Because she believes in the scrolls or has come to learn to believe in the scrolls with her history of what's gone on and Kamala and the visions. Can you discount him or can you just say it's the morphine talking or it's a crazy man drinking his own crazy juice or, you know, or is there something to it?
And in this scene between these two enemies who have been for the longest time, this intimacy again, like where he's bleeding out and she's been bandaging him up. And then he tells her the truth and she chooses to kill him. And it's just like gory and beautiful and awful. And you can see it all on her face that she's just reckoning with, am I this person? Can I have that which I've always wanted? Am I enough? Am I cold enough and cruel enough and distant enough from everybody to do this awful thing?
And is it
thing?
Justified because of and what he did?
Totally. Like nobody would hold
justice,
it against her.
You know, is it personal? Is it for everybody?
Like she wanted to toss him in an airlock.
Nobody would even know, really, because he was wounded beforehand. It's not like she drew the knife across him, you know? It's only them in there. He bled out. Like, but she has to grapple with that herself and see if she can do it.
Yeah.
And when we come back from commercial break, we will find out the answer.
Indeed. We are going to take a quick word from our sponsors. Look at you, Trisha, remembering to take a commercial break. But we'll be right back.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
And we're back.
I'm like, that was only, I was like, oh, do we have to be quiet for like 2 minutes? It was like 2 seconds. So weird. I remember my first award show.
It's called a sound.
I remember one of my first award shows that I went to, and I realized the whole award show was done for the cameras. It was not done for the audience. And it was like, this is really weird. It's like kind of Truman Show-like.
Yeah, that's why award shows are so boring generally, because they're so, they take so long, right? And then, like, you're in the audience, you're thinking, oh, this is so exciting, and da, 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 and then, okay, we're going to redo that again for this camera over here. Like, clap, clap like this is the first time you've heard it.
Don't be embarrassed when you didn't get the award.
Yeah, no, I resolved never to go to an award show unless I'm nominated, and even then, it's going to be a judgment call. On the day. I'm like, do I really want to do that? I'm like, that seems like it's awful. Unless it's the Globes when there's booze. In which case,
you
okay.
Bring your own booze.
A when James, flask.
Well, yeah, that's about it. I remember when James and I presented at the Technical Emmys. And there's no alcohol there. And James was so nervous. And he had his kind of handler go get some red wine. So the guy brought in a bottle of red wine. And James and I kind of drank. Most of it. And we get out on stage. She's like, the drivel they've given us to say is just not funny at all. And he's like, I'm going to embellish. I'm like, no, James. No. No, I'm not quick on my feet. I can't. And he did, and it fell flat. Nobody laughed. And I'm just sitting up there going, I have nothing to add. Yeah, we were never invited back to present again.
Wow.
Anyway.
And that's a cautionary tale, everybody. Award shows and red wine and improv, maybe not the way to go.
I think he said something really quite British and nobody got it is what it was. Because James is a very funny guy, but it just was very dry and nobody got it, but...
So wait, in the history of award shows, a British dude went up and went like British and it didn't work?
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
Wow. That's something.
It does.
Yeah. But so hey, got, you know, Battlestar.
We've got Deanna. So Hilo and fake Athena have Deanna in their clutches in the Raptor and they're headed back. And we did miss a point where Roslyn was talking with Hilo. Hilo goes to Roslyn has instructed because they were the Cylons and the humans had agreed to interrogate Deanna together in the control room, and Roslyn has instructed Hilo to not comply with that and to bring Deanna straight to her, which is really and you know Hilo doing the thing Hilo always does is saying no I you know that's not right and. You know, we've just had this speech from fake Athena to all the pilots saying we have to trust each other. And the leader at the top agrees to one thing and then completely undermines. So I wasn't very happy.
It's a presidential dick move, I think is the appropriate term. Dick move, Laura. It's a real dick move.
But Hilo does do, instead of what Hilo often does in Buck's authority, he listens to her in this.
Yeah. When he shouldn't have, he finally does. And then we're in the middle of one of Laura's visions. Every time the base ship jumps, she kind of is again like haunting the halls of Galactica. And she gets to witness her own death. She gets to witness her own passing. And she sees the level of love, the depth of the love that Bill Adama has for her.
That lighting, he looks gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. Unfair. I would like to have a lighting package everywhere I go.
Magic lighting, please.
Magic lighting. But yeah, and so, and in this, she begins to soften her murder stance, Guy's Baltar. Mm-hmm. Murder stance. Yeah. Look at her.
Yeah. She's like, ooh. No.
Yeah. Maybe not kill this dude. I don't know.
Maybe not kill this dude. And Athena is that, or not Athena, Alosha. This is what she's saying when she's in, because I was just reading it and not watching, but I think we just passed when Adama is looking over her, she has this. She says, I'm not saying Baltar has done more good than harm in the universe. He hasn't. The thing is, the harder it is to recognize someone's right to draw breath, the more crucial it is. If humanity is going to prove itself worthy of surviving, it can't do it on a case-by-case basis. A bad man feels his death just as keenly as a good one. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes her change her mind, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that and Bill. And Bill at death's door, giving her love that she's not entirely sure she's earned, you know. And Elosha's whole point is, you got to just love somebody, which feels like a song.
Yeah, it's not about earning, you know, love. Also not about earning your life. Like, you have the right, you've already, it is your birthright to live. And it's great that they're contrasted against each other. But I was...
Totally. And it's how you live and it's how you choose to conduct yourself. And, you know, it doesn't belie that right, but you can make your life what you want it to be, Laura. You know, do you want it to be hollow and lonely? Do you want it to be just about purpose, or do you want it to actually have some substance? Do you want to be the person you claim to want to be? And she makes a choice, and she saves Guy's Baltar's life, which is its own weird thing.
And a huge act of grace. and then,
yes.
And it's great because she is alone and no one would know. It's like supposed to show their character even more, you know, what would she do? You could get away with it.
Totally. It's not performative. It is fundamentally, you know, a human thing that she's doing, which is great.
Those private moments, for the character, which reveals a lot about them.
Mm-hmm.
White pants. You can see all the blood.
Like, and it's got to be like after Labor Day, man. Like, with the white pants?
Yeah.
With this?
I was so used to blood and fake dirt and fake sweat. What is that, glycerin? You know, where they dab it all over your face and it just stays there all the time.
And it's sticky. I hate that.
The fake blood is sweet. And different versions of it. The really, the one you can stipple on. Dark one, really liquidy one, which is brighter red. It's like fresher. It was like awesome.
Yeah. Fresh blood, old blood.
Healing blood.
Is this a Dr. Seuss book that I'm not familiar with? Fresh blood, old blood, blue blood, new blood. Everybody bleeds the same. Everybody does it, Jane. I do like this scene with Deanna, who Rosalind finally gets what she wants. You know, Hilo has broken faith and broken his word in executing the president's word and brought Deanna straight to Rosalind, which I'm sure won't come back to haunt anybody that he's broken the deal with the Cylons. And she wants to know, all right, tell me, who are the five Cylons within my fleet? And she's like, oh, you don't know that you're one of them? It's like, what? You gotta... Oh, it's... She starts laughing. It's like, you got me.
Timing.
Yeah. I know. Bathroom lady.
And she knows. She's like, I'm not giving you any names. I wouldn't have given any names if you had taken me to the control room either, and in front of everybody. Because the only thing I have going for me, now that I'm mortal, the only thing going for me and saving me right now is the fact that I know something everybody else doesn't.
Yes.
You know, until I'm safe, we're you know, I'm not giving any names.
Until you take me back to the fleet, I won't give you anything. And by the way, you've ruined this very tenuous relationship for nothing.
Yeah.
And like, oh, burn.
Because this deception was a complete waste of time.
I love all the other narrative you guys are doing. Like all the subtext. This is more fun. And then your timing was so good because it matched up exactly with her face where she stopped to ponder, like, am I? And then I even thought, is she?
Is she?
Have I forgotten that?
Only a split second. Only
a split second. Yeah, the fun part about this rewatch, at least for me, is because the first time around, I was a journalist and I was covering it. I was paying super close attention, but also recapping it every fucking night and not actually getting to live with it. And so to revisit this stuff, and I've forgotten what happens, even though I'm so technically acutely aware of what happens. Like, if I didn't know better, this is the episode that, like, it's like they're going to kill Starbuck. Did they just fucking kill Starbuck? Holy shit. No, what? Come on.
Wait, Mark. Okay, you have to forgive me. You can call me whatever. Were you not one of the writers eventually on our show? Am I that?
No, I never made it.
Why are we doing a podcast with you? I do not understand. Okay, so you covered the show.
For Entertainment Weekly. Yes.
For Entertainment Weekly, I was an editor at EW. I recapped the show. I wrote about the show. I exhorted them to put it on the cover, which they finally did.
You were the editor of EW. Are you still?
No. I was a senior editor there for like 13 years, and then they showed me the door, which is fine because then I got to be a TV writer.
But you're not on the show. I just assumed that you were one of our writers. And that's why I was so confused. I'm like, why don't you know your face better? You would have been there.
Like, you should have been there.
You were there behind the monitors, and I just thought it was my memory. And I was like, whatever.
No, your memory is just fine. I'm a writer, just not the writer.
You are a writer. Oh, that's awesome. That's exciting.
Yes, no, I'm the fan. I'm the professional nerd who's managed to, yes.
Well, I remember you giving us lots of love because Entertainment Weekly, you being a fan of the show and you being the covering journalist, you wrote, I mean, I'm sure you pointed out flaws as well, just like we've been doing as we go along. But Entertainment Weekly was always very kind to us and, great magazine.
Yeah, like one of my favorite Battlestar moments was I was in my office watching, I want to say it was like the season 2 just came out on DVD and I'm sitting there watching. And I turn over my shoulder, and standing in my doorway of my office is Stephen King, who had literally been there for like 15 minutes, and I didn't notice him. And he's like, yeah, this is a hell of a show, huh? I'm like, yeah, no, I really dig it. And then he stayed there for another 10 minutes, and I went on to the next episode, and then he just kept on walking down the hall. I was like, well, I guess I just met Stephen King.
That's your meeting?
This is pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, like he was a columnist for the magazine for a stretch. And he was visiting the office.
Oh,
and
yeah,
he was like, hey, I remember. I like this show too.
I'm sure I've read many of your articles then. Is that why?
And I apologize in hindsight for anything that I might have said.
The whole podcast, can you scrub me out of it?
Yeah. And so this episode ends. It ends so lovely where, Bill is just sleeping in his Raptor by himself and the base ship jumps back in and he lands and he steps out and she just, I missed you. I love you. And then like a fucking space baller, he's like, about time.
I know. I actually kind of laughed when he said that because I was about to say, I was expecting him to be like, I love you too. It's about time. It's like a baller move.
I love that.
It's awesome.
But everybody's like,
and like tears are running in her face, and he's got the little lower quivery lip, and it's adorable and lovely and wonderful. And about time.
And about time, exactly.
Yes.
Do you have a frackdown of the week, Mark?
I do, Grace, for the uninitiated. A frackdown of the week is a moment in any given episode that is noteworthy, that stands out. It can be either a glorious, wonderful, positive frackdown. It can be a, what was that all about? Didn't understand that frackdown. They are by and large positive, but every now and again, it's a, what the fuck was that about?
Of the episode that we just covered.
Yes. So my frackdown is a good one. It's the Laura Baltar scene. It's him sort of confessing, you know, in his perfect Jesus pose, his arms out, blood literally coming from his side, like it had been stabbed by a Roman soldier's spear. Like it is so crucifixion-y, that it's kind of glorious. And honesty between those two characters, which is a thing that they've rarely shared, is actually like, let me tell you what I think. Let me tell you what I did. And I don't need forgiveness from you because I've already been forgiven by God. And her reaction to that, I thought was a long time coming and handled beautifully. And yes, James had like a 19-page monologue.
He did. Yeah.
Which is bonkers.
Well, that was going to be my frackdown.
It's okay. We can have the same one.
No, I have to think of another frackdown.
Let's hear your version of the frackdown.
No, yeah. I can't say it any better than that. No, it's you know, I'll go with that one because I do think that I thought this episode was a little it skewed a little different for me. Maybe the I don't know. Not I mean it's still the story and the through line and everything, but I'm just going to go with that one too because it does tell so much of to the relationship of these characters and the relationship to the rest of the fleet and that she goes back to saving his life afterwards mm-hmm. when she, you know, tells you something about Laura that may have gotten lost a little bit along the journey of who she really is and kind of getting back in touch with that herself.
Yeah, she's been very pragmatic up until now. She's been very much like, I will do whatever needs to be done in order to safeguard this fleet, which you can understand completely, but it's clinical for her in lots of ways. And I think this episode does bring it back to the personal, the why she believes that this fleet should be saved, why she believes in these people, why she believes even in the worst of us, you know, we all deserve a shot at redemption.
Yeah, and she's had to become more pragmatic and more, I mean, they've been put under such extreme hardships and everything that there is a side that had of her that did have to toughen up to that kind of coldness, so to speak, mm-hmm. to be able to do her job and not get weighed down by it too much and to keep moving forward. But she lost the hope somewhere yes. along the way a little bit. And this just kind of, to me, was a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And beautifully cinematic, like you said, with the whole Jesus thing, and like, and I'm like, I didn't get any of that. He was laying on a table and he was bleeding out. But
he can get away with it, and he can get away with it.
Yes.
Oh, totally.
Now, can you think of a frackdown off the top of your head?
Oh my gosh, I missed so much of the episode. The frackdown is either like a yay or nay,
good or bad.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. We've had some bad ones where something didn't like gel well with us, or one of mine once was bad ADR. I was like, I can't watch the scene because like it's my voice is way too loud for I was whispering.
I think the problem was I didn't actually watch the episode, so I think the only thing I could do right now is talk more visually. And I'm honestly going like I was partway through the Wiki, you know, Pedia description, and I think for me it's like a super small side thing, but. You know, when we have some, and I know, Trisha, that you said this before, when we have so many other, I guess, photo devils, because obviously not that many of us. And so having them run in the shot, or you think it's supposed to be you, and it's like, mm-hmm. is that supposed to be an eight? Like that, it does not look, not that I look like a soldier, because at the end of the show, I was like, I should have worked out a lot more on that show, you know, like things like that. You're like, I guess I could have gotten a place because I was silent, but that's just justifying it. So you see little things. And then being the actor, and I haven't seen a lot of that, or it's a lot easier to watch everyone else's work. And, but then to notice it was all, like I said, muted, but to kind of, I actually just want to go back, and it's hard without the audio to see if you're going to nay or yay it. But, I guess some of the questions are, when we are stitching together these scenes with so many characters and people and supposedly being the same ones. So it's like a really small little note, but, you know, we get the day, you have to get the days in and put it together.
Yeah. I am always continually amazed. You know, like making television now as a job and knowing how many ways it can go wrong, that when a thing is good, it's miraculous. And when a thing is great, it's singular, you know, and even the worst episode of a really great show is better than the best of most things. And not that I thought that this was the worst episode by far of Battlestar. We already talked about Black Market. but yeah, I'm always in awe that when a story can be executed that feels anything close to what the intentions were, and that all 300 people who have to make a thing can get on the same page and make that thing happen. Your average viewer just doesn't know how many ways it can go wrong and how rarely it does on a show like Battlestar. So
I absolutely agree. Huzzah.
Yeah. Yep. Well, thank you, Grace, for visiting us.
Guys, that was great. I wish I'd done more.
Yeah.
But you guys are near the end.
We're near the end, but hey, we can. I have a feeling that we are going to try and do something a little special for the finale. I don't know what. Oh, hey, Fiona's butt.
Fiona's butt always makes an appearance. Nobody sees it but us.
I know. What are you working on these days that you want to tell the folks about?
Well, right now it's hiatus for kind of everybody, but I've been working on a show on ABC called A Million Little Things. Not to be confused with A Million Little Pieces, the book, which is what a lot of people can think. And
you guys just got a third season.
We did. We got the third season to pick up. We were not sure which country and state and city it was going to land in. And sort of at a last minute play, it is going to stay in Vancouver. And so that will be good. But I don't know when we're starting. I think there's just so many logistics. And as you were talking about how hard it is to make a television show or how many pieces can go wrong, I know a day like – when you have a tight day with a lot of pieces happening and you've been doing it a long time, you're kind of going with all engines going, and that's with everything ideally happening. And it's still a full day. Could be super exhausting, especially if you're not only in a couple and you're kind of doing most of the day. I don't know what it's going to look like now with new potential changes, and I don't know if it's going to differ from state to state, from Canada to US. And I mean, just walking down the street, you don't know how people are going to respond, and everyone's so different. So, it's going to be interesting. It's a whole other topic that I don't really feel like anyone wants to start right now, because I have my opinions, but I'm really grateful to be a part of the show. It's like fantastic cast and, character-driven drama, but a group of friends who they lose one of them unexpectedly, and they kind of question that kind of a lot in their own lives and their friendships. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And the people can find you on the socials if they want to see what else is going on. Yeah. Or you're not a social person?
You mean
person?
Like social media stuff? No. Yeah. I'm like, everything's all hidden. I'm just, you know, I think I'm going to close down
good
some other
you.
Sites and stuff, but I mean, I don't, I, if any, I think I have, I don't know, maybe 200 followers on Instagram. They're just my people I know. I just really like to cull everything down. I just want to keep streamlining everything.
That is not a bad impulse these days at all. But yes, thank you so much, Grace, for taking time out of your Canadian spring.
I really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to hearing the other podcasts. You can play it at the same time when you watch. Is that how it works?
Mm-hmm.
Do totally. What? Sorry.
So like the way viewers watch, because I remember Ron Moore did a podcast a long time ago. You're kind of supposed to play it and then play the podcast and the episode at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it works out. And then sometimes it's like, listen, we're just hanging out. If you want to watch, we might every now and again reference something on the screen. But other times it's just, let's just have a conversation.
When we have a guest, we tend to talk more to the guest and about the episode, in the background, but it's more about your experiences. When it's just Mark and I, we go a little bit more scene specific.
How many episodes is just you two? Like half?
Ooh.
Half?
Maybe, half seems about right.
Totally got the cat butt.
Yes.
We
would like to thank Fiona's butt for making an appearance. We want to thank Bear McCreary for his amazing theme song. We want to thank the good folks at Sci-Fi for continuing to indulge Fiona's butt. And
talk of hornets. Do you want to see my other fight?
Oh. Wow.
Ooh, that was like a nasty sting or bruise.
That's intense.
That's one of the three I got. The other's on my head.
You got to stop fighting hornets. Trisha, that's
the problem. Drama.
I know.
I'm just so sweet. They like me.
And thank you to Brett Boehm for making us sound good.
Yes, and thank you to Mark.
Oh,
for putting
Trisha.
Up with my hornet stories.
No, buzz, buzz. and we will see all of you next week for
Revelations.
Revelations, indeed. All right, everybody, take care of yourselves. Wash your hands.
Be kind.
So say we all.
So say we all.